Janie Lee Grace. Welcome to the Natural Health and Sobriety Show on UK Health Radio.
Hi, and welcome. And my guest is Penny Newton-Hurley, who is a human connection specialist. I've chatted to Penny before, and we always have such a fascinating conversation about communication. So I feel like I've got to be on my best behavior and get my words right. Welcome, Penny.
Thank you. How are you? Lovely to be here.
Yeah, it's great to chat to you. I mean, I do find the whole, you know, the whole conversation around communication and the way we communicate and empathy and all of that stuff, I do find it absolutely fascinating. And I think however much you do on this topic, there's always so much more. And of course, that's your world, isn't it?
Yes. I'm
constantly looking at this, right?
Exactly. And I've long thought that the word communication just doesn't do it. It doesn't do it justice, and not least of which is that many people, when I say I do communication, think, you know, like internet communications, that's that term, or internal communications or external communication, media and all that. And that's why I've started using the word connection more, because it's really about how we connect human to human. It's that interpersonal. And we know when we're connected, and we know full well when we're disconnected. And sadly, I think we're disconnected a lot of the time.
Yeah, totally.
And ourselves.
Yeah. And obviously, you know, from my perspective, I want to kind of think of this from the perspective of well-being and how a communication impacts directly on our emotional well-being. I mean, we all know, don't we, that it just takes an interaction with someone else, particularly if it's someone who, I don't know, has something we want, whether that's an employer or just a family member. But we all know how derailing it can be when you have a difficult kind of communication or lack of communication.
Yeah.
It really impacts on your well-being, doesn't it?
Oh, well-being. I think communication, connection is at the heart of well-being. And it's stress is caused when we have those difficult conversations. It puts us into that fight flight mode and the sympathetic nervous system that, you know, cortisol running round. And as you say, it could be, an uncomfortable conversation that you've had and didn't turn out well.
Mm.
It could be somebody not talking to you. It could be you not talking to somebody because you don't know what to say and you best avoid it, you feel. It could be that you're hearing things about you said not to your face. It can be your own mind as well, creating stuff. How much do we do that? Assumptions.
Yeah.
We've spun so many stories in our minds of what may or may not be happening with other people, what they may be saying or doing, thinking. And so we cause this big furor in our minds, and that causes us to be on this high alert.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Honestly, and, you know, the work that I do, you know, training holistic coaches, sober coaches, part of our work is making sure that we're able to obviously listen, you know, to what the client is telling us. But what's really interesting is that one of the things we kind of look at early on is the fact that what the client tells us is often not what they mean. So they'll say something, but actually we get pretty good at hearing what they really mean, because people find it so difficult, particularly when, if they're talking about themselves, they're talking about something they want, for example, they often talk about what they don't want. Do you sort of mean, rather than actually presenting with the problem? And I think that's partly because they haven't exactly got it sorted in their own mind. But certainly if it's something they desire, I just think we've all been kind of programmed to think we don't deserve anything that we think we want.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, that comes from core beliefs, doesn't it? Which is
absolutely limiting beliefs.
Connection of self-connection. You know, the beliefs we carry around that are formulated in childhood and sort of being confirmed, you know, as we've grown older. And you know, most of us, until we're learn that, don't know that that's a thing, and don't know that we're carrying them around or what they are. So that's one thing. And I think the other thing is core needs. If we all knew that we were, we anything we do or say is in the aim of meeting a core need, we could get underneath the surface of our desires. You know, like people say they want a holiday, or as you put it, you know, they don't want any more trouble with this person or whatever. If we can ask the right questions, if we're in a listening mode as a coach, to dig down and find out what is the actual core need that is not being met here. And it's not a holiday or less communication with that person or promotion or you know, less work. It's more fundamental than that. You know, we're talking about needs for safety, needs for belonging, needs.
Yeah, there's this sort of Maslow's hierarchy, isn't there? That of needs that and it's interesting you say that, because what tends to happen is if we do identify that that's the need, we feel guilty about that. It's like, oh, okay, I've recognised. I just need to feel safe here. And then the next kind of thought that often comes up is, well, that's just pathetic. Of course you're safe. You should be grateful that you've got home and you've got so we go off on that tangent.
The disconnection again, that mind spiral, self-blame, blaming inwards. We should never blame ourselves for the needs we have, because absolutely 8 billion people on this, or however many are on this planet now, all have the same fundamental needs, because we're human beings. And it's about meeting them. That's the simple.
Just go over what those basic needs are again.
So I describe them as Marshall Rosenberg did in Nonviolent Communication, as fundamental human universal needs. And there are plenty of them, but they're abstract. They're not, you know, I need you to give that report in on time. They're not that sort of need. They're not money. They're not, material things. They are those abstract needs. There are needs for safety and basic human needs around air and water and all that sort of thing, or sustenance. But there's also needs for belonging, partnership, cooperation, collaboration. There's those more work-based needs, you might say, because they're around efficiency and effectiveness and order and structure. But we need those in all of our lives, you know, some of us more than others. I know I really have strong needs for order and structure. And then there's the self actualization needs of growth and contribution and then there's the comfort needs as well, you know, to feel, to not just to feel safe, but to feel at ease. We want ease, and this world's not giving us that ease. So these are the fundamental needs I'm talking about, and we all have them. And the thing is, they're not long term. They pop up.
Yes. Yeah. Of course.
Different times of the day. From one moment to the next, we will be having different needs, but it's about identifying them. And some needs we will find that they do crop up more, and some I believe are values. Some sort of turn into values. They become needs, like health or you know, even environmental values that sort of compass. They're like a compass to us.
Yes.
So our sort of higher value needs are out there guiding us, but in the moment it's about being in touch with our body and our sensations and our feelings to understand what the needs are that we're trying to meet.
And the feelings, of course, also, you know, really important, the emotions, and again, that's something that as coaches we talk about all of the time, this idea that in an ideal world, we would we would sort of recognize, wouldn't we, that all emotions are welcome. You know, they will pass, but they're all welcome. We don't find that very easy, do we? Because we don't like feeling angry or jealous or guilty. We hate the
Absolutely.
negative emotions. Of course we do. But actually, if we can acknowledge them, then we can see it for what it is. We can look at what we need to be able to move through that more quickly.
Absolutely. Feelings, emotions help you get to what you're needing. And
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
I hear this so much, you know, that I shouldn't get emotional. And I think you should get emotional.
Yeah.
What we want to help ourselves not do is react on our emotions. Mm. That's the piece where we want to pause and then we can respond. We can connect our brain up because if we're in fight flight, so if, say, an email's come in and we get angry and upset and we fight back and write one, then, you know, that's where it we're reacting emotionally. But if we pause and we consider, what am I feeling now? What's going on here? These emotions are fundamental. It's a fundamental human process to have emotions.
Yeah, absolutely. And
they need to be let out. They need to be heard.
Yeah, exactly. And on the sort of letting out thing, you know, you're absolutely right. Putting the pause in, it's so critical, isn't it? And one of the things I often recommend to clients I'm working with, if they've got this, you know, I absolutely must just have a glass of wine, you know, I get them to kind of pause and ask themselves, what is it they really want? Because it's sure as hell isn't the alcohol, you know, what's really going on? And and if they can identify that actually it's just that they want to step away from the noise, or as you say, they identify they're angry or they're overly emotional about the phone call they've just had or whatever it is, then they can choose a way to deal with that and to work through that. And sometimes I've found if you're really upset or really angry or fearful, one of the best things to do is actually just let the body take it and go and shake it out, you know, or dance for 5 minutes, because it allows your body to come back to knowing, okay, it's all right, I'm safe here. There isn't actually a tiger or someone standing there with a knife.
Yeah. And actually, emotions, Dr. Candice Pert says that those raw emotions that grip us, those bodily rage and sensations in the body that come first, if we allow those, they will dissipate in 90 seconds. It's that chemical that goes through your body, but they turn into feelings when we start pondering on them. And we do need to do that. We need
yeah.
to consider what's going on here. And then they become feelings that we can talk about, you know, feelings of happiness, loneliness, sadness. And then we can understand them and actually connecting with what it is, and saying it, naming a feeling, does that extra connection bit in our brain to link up the amygdala's alarm bell with the prefrontal cortex, which is the cognitive functioning that can moderate. It calms us down because it kicks in and does the moderation. Absolutely, we want to feel. And it's in our language as well. That's why the language, the words we speak are so powerful. And if we hear ourselves, sometimes we say to people, "Don't worry," and we're telling them not to feel.
Yeah, you know? It's very true, isn't it?
Yeah, and we tell ourselves, "I mustn't get angry." So it's the opposite. We want to encourage ourselves to feel these things, and when they feel, I was coaching somebody not so long ago, and she was telling me about her situation, and I got her to look at the emotions gear wheel that I have, and I said, you know, tell me, what are you feeling? She said, I'm really angry. Somebody had talked, she's got ADHD, and somebody said, oh, it's just, I'll use a different word, oh, it's just Barbara, that's just the way she is. And that triggered her, and she felt so angry when that happened. And then as she looked at the wheel, I said, anything else? And she went to frustrated. And then there was something else. And after about a minute or so, she said, I feel lonely.
Mm.
And that's what happens when we listen to our emotions. We allow them through, and it reveals, especially if it's anger.
Yeah,
it reveals what's really going on underneath.
Yeah.
So, and it doesn't have to take long.
No, absolutely. let me ask you, Penny, what got you into all of this? Tell us a little bit about your background.
Oh yeah, well, I've always liked language. I did languages, modern languages, at school and at university. And it was all about how do I just thrilled to connect with people, you know, in different ways. But then it was really when I found Marshall Rosenberg's book. It was a life coach I was seeing at the time for postnatal depression. And she said, have a read of this book. It can help with your relationships. It can help with you generally with your life. Your work, because I was, you know, what do I do with my career? And I was absolutely hooked. And I thought it just spoke to me. So
this is the non-violent communication. Just explain what that means for anyone who's not come across it before.
Yeah, it's non-violent communication is about deep connection with ourselves and with others. It's about non-judgment, about, you know, looking at what we judge and turning that into facts and observations. It's about connecting with our feelings, connecting with our needs, and it's about making requests rather than demands. And for me, I realized over the years that I started in about 2007, I think it was, I realized that actually I was needing to unlearn all that I'd learned around connecting, talking with people, around what I thought about myself, and slowly peel back the layers of understanding. Because in itself, it seems quite easy. Yeah, okay, so don't judge, understand your feelings, talk about your needs and make requests. But there's so much depth to all of those. And when we study, when we practice it, we realize just how much there is to, for example, the mind and judgments. You know, we notice that we're making them practically all the time.
All the time. Mm.
And they make a difference to how we think about somebody and how we view them. You know, somebody, new person starts on the team and somebody's already said, oh, I'm not sure about them. You know, so you're taking that on and their judgment becomes your judgment, becomes how you interact with them. And it's noticing, you know, when we call somebody incompetent or lazy or any of those adjectives and labels that we pin on people or assumptions that we make of what somebody must be thinking. When we strip that away and actually look at what the facts are, it helps us to separate our perception and judgments, which, you know, there's a validness in that. We don't blame ourselves for it. It's the way our minds work. But separate that from the actual fact. And that is the start of, of really opening our mind. It's about open-mindedness and sort of really aiming to get away from enemy thinking. We can tend to think people are out to get us. People are doing things to hurt us, and
because that's the thing, isn't it? It's when you know, for all of us, when we get angry at somebody else, when we sort of lash out, and often it can be the person closest to us, of course, that, you know, they kind of become the punch ball in many cases. But when we do that kind of lashing out thing, actually it's almost never really about the other person or what they've done, is it? It's always about our own reactions.
Yes. And so people get stuck in cycles, don't we? Like that. Yeah. We lash out, they lash out. We go silent, we don't talk for the rest of the day. Yeah.
And for some of us, we've got there might be one or two people who that is prevalent with. I mean, I know in my own case, you know, years ago, I'm sure we've had this conversation before, but, you know, I'm now trained in as a family constellations practitioner, and I absolutely love that work. But years ago, before I did any of that, I look back and I'm actually ashamed at how I used to behave around my mum, because I can now see, having done the constellations work and it turned around completely, and I'm unbelievably grateful that I ended up having 20 years with her before she died, or certainly 15, where it was completely different. And I actually, you know, had a respect for her, because she'd been through a huge amount. And her parenting wasn't great. That's just a fact. I did not have very good parenting. She had nothing to give. You know, it's a long story, but she had nothing to give. And I was able to see that once I'd done constellations. But up until that point, it was just the sort of wounded, hurt child in me reacting every time I saw her. Even though I was an adult with my own kids, I can see now, revert to being just mean and effectively lashing out at her. And I've seen it with other people. You know, it's, you know, they say, oh, she presses every button, you know, and then we react badly. But now I can see it so clearly. It was entirely, you know, what was going on with me that I couldn't pinpoint, couldn't identify. I just knew that as soon as she was around, I would snap into that really kind of snappy, snippy mode. And for many people, there is someone like that they'll say, oh, they press my buttons.
Yeah, absolutely. You're so right, Janie. And it, funnily enough, I lost my mum when I was 18 as well. And it made me grow up overnight, but I've sort of carried around with me the guilt of how I was a stroppy teenager. But thankfully, I had a love. You know, my mum was great at parenting. We don't, unless we find out, we don't realise that these things are embedded in us.
No, we don't. We really don't.
They come out in our interactions with others, as you say.
Yeah.
So easy to blame the other person and say, it's you, you're doing it to me. And it's that willingness to understand that actually we're in control of some of this. And some of it, you know, as you will know, is we need some help to delve into it. You know, we need some professional help to delve in.
Sometimes it can be hard to see our own stuff, can't it?
Yes,
it can. Really hard to get in touch with our own core yeah. beliefs and the things yeah. that are holding us back, because yeah. they're so ingrained in us.
we can't,
it's hard to recognize them.
Yeah, well, it needs time. It needs some special time put aside for it, and not to expect it overnight. And then sometimes, you know, and I made a realization that I didn't like to talk to people in my early 20s. I found it very difficult to speak up. And I through sort of self-reflection, I remembered the phrase children should be seen
in. Yeah,
and
of course.
Talking to my siblings, because my parents are both gone, they said it was our uncle, actually. I thought it was our parents, but it was our uncle who used to say that. So I was in fear of speaking up. And I think it was a little bit of a joke even. I mean, let's face it, their parents were in the Victorian era. So that was a relatively easy and painless core belief that I found myself.
Yeah. So many people have that, don't they? Fear, well, again, with the work that I do now, part of what I'm doing with coaches is helping them recognize it's okay to stand up and be visible and share what it is you do. But the fear that so many people have of speaking in public or being seen, it's incredible. The number of people. In fact, that I heard a really funny thing the other day where somebody said that there are stats around fear of public speaking. In the US, it's like the number one fear. In the UK, I think it's second after death, something like that. And so, you know, someone would rather kind of be in the coffin than give the eulogy. That's how crazy it is. And in so many cases, that literally just stems back to somebody saying as a child, you know, this is not about you, you know, we don't want to hear you, or words to that effect, to so many people in school or at home or whatever. And you know, that wasn't a thought out comment. Oh, I'm going to go and have a conversation with that person because I really think they should be quiet. It's just an off the cuff remark. But children take it in, don't they, like a sponge.
Children, young minds without that prefrontal cortex development that they say now doesn't, it used to be 25, age 25, they're saying it can be into your 30s.
Is that right? Wow.
Before the whole brain is there.
It's so fully formed,
Children take things in. I heard this story recently where somebody had been coaching another, and they got to a situation. He was able to remember when he was about six, when his mum, he'd drawn a picture and he was so pleased about it, and he took it to his mum and he said, "Mum, look at this," and she said, "Oh, not now, not
yeah, I'm busy,
really busy," and he shut down, and that had caused him. I mean, this chap was in his, I don't know, 40s, 50s, had affected him all his life. Didn't realize until then. So
It's fascinating. Talking children, let's talk about this, because I know this is something that's very close to your heart. The fact that we, you know, it's so time, isn't it, to teach children to that it's okay to have emotions, you know, rather than what we do. Oh dear, you're upset, have a sweet, you know, or oh, you're making some kind of noise, go sit on a naughty seat. I mean, it's time for a change, isn't it?
I think so because we're just continuing the same education, aren't we? Education, inverted commas, generally, you know, schools and as parents, without that knowledge. And I think my real keenness for the you know, generations to come and children is because I've taught so many adults now the human language, or what I call it, and some people are willing to do that bit of self-awareness, to look at how they are and how they speak in order to, you know, be better at speaking with others. And some people just find it too difficult.
So,
And so I figured that if we're going to change this world, and my mantra is changing the way the world speaks and listens, we do need to start with our younger generations. The sooner, the better. And especially now that we've got AI and they're starting to listen to that and get empathy from that.
Yeah. God, yeah.
UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Talk to me about AI then. What's your view of what's going on? Because you're right. I've noticed recently. I've noticed recently with my own a couple of my own kids. You know, young adults. They'll sometimes in the past they would have figured something out, or they'd have asked me and like, oh, what's the best way to deal with this? You know, and they'd have had a conversation around it. And now something will come up and I'll go, have you made a decision, or have you written to that person, or have you sent an email? And they'll just go, oh, yeah, I just got chat to write it.
Yes.
Wow. Isn't that interesting?
This is the worry. And in fact, I'm doing a webinar in October about the effect of AI on our human development,
right,
and human connection. And I think, you know, businesses are saying AI first. That is what they're saying, reach to AI. And I think there's a whole thing about, you know, we're not, our creative mind, which is our higher cognitive thinking, is what we've got over AI at the moment, and empathy, although AI is trying to empathize. And we need to build those skills even more. We don't have them naturally necessarily, so we need to build them to survive against AI, I think. And so what's happening, and when children or adults go to AI for that, the neural pathways are going to stop. A good case in point, how many phone numbers do you remember now? I used to remember my bank.
I used to remember that a good 20.
Yes.
Off the cuff, you're right. Yeah.
Exactly. So that's called digital amnesia. It's a cognitive bias. Our brains don't need that anymore because
we can just click it on the phone. Yeah.
And so those neural pathways cease to be. They can be built up again if we so wish, but they're not functioning because our brain needs to be efficient. So it doesn't need that. And I fear that this is what's going to happen if we start relying on AI to come up in the initial stages with the email or the idea.
No, I agree. But also it's that sort of critical discernment, isn't it? Critical thinking, discernment particularly. Yes. Because what I find is with AI, I joke about it sometimes, you know, with my husband, you have a kind of something you kind of believe, something you think, okay, it's this way. So you'll type that into AI and it will say, yes, you know, you're absolutely right. Let me give you a whole, you know, whatever it is, some paragraphs as to how to do that or how to explain that or whatever. And it will give it to you, if you want, in great detail. Mm-hmm. So you're like, oh, right, so I'm doing this the right way. And it can even be something legal, you know, actually legal or really quite technical, something very important. And you'll get a whole raft of stuff as to how to do it, you know, or if it's, I don't know, some kind of internet thing, you know, do this, do that and everything. You're quite right, works this way, do this, do that. And then if you're still got enough brain cells to have a conversation, this has actually happened to myself and Simon. We'll have a conversation and then because I'm an absolute questioner, I'll go, yeah, but hold on a minute. What if that were to happen? That there is that possibility. And then he'll go, yeah, okay, I see what you mean. So then you type into the same AI program, but what about if this were to happen? And what does it do? It comes back, you're absolutely right.
Yes, because
it's this way.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's just given you a completely different scenario because you were bright enough to tell it was wrong. And go, oops. You know, and of course, in the small print, it says it makes mistakes.
Yes.
Of course it bloody does. You know, but meanwhile, potentially something really important. We've now got a saying in our house, chat shit. That's basically the bottom line, isn't it? Really. You cannot rely on it for something important.
No.
Just can't. Really a case of let's type in what I believe and it will say, oh, you're absolutely right. Let me give you everything that supports that. Yeah. And then you can say, actually, I've changed my mind. Oh, you're absolutely right. Let me support that, which is really frustrating. And actually, you know, you can see why. I mean, goodness knows how university lecturers manage to decide whether anyone knows anything or not.
Yeah. And this is the problem. Like, we haven't learned from the email revolution, from the internet revolution, from the social media revolution. We haven't learned A, to regulate it and B, to teach people the fundamental ways to use it.
Yeah, because I mean we can't be completely negative. You know, there'll be people listening to this saying, oh, for God's sake, you know, a couple of old ladies banging on about how terrible AI is. It's not terrible. Yeah, exactly. That'll be the perception, sadly, if my kids watch. But, you know, it's like I'm not against AI. Of course not.
No.
Why would we be? I don't want to lose the ability to think for myself.
So we need to be taught how to use it well. We want to gain all the benefits. I heard the other day somebody uses it to sort their inbox and go and retrieve from their files all the information about this. Fantastic. Time-saving work that we don't want to do. But when it comes to connecting with somebody, we, you know, that's when we need to employ our humanness. And I think it's fine to, you know, come up with the ideas, maybe then pass it through AI and say, you know, what do you think? And then be critical again. Oh, well, no, I don't like that change. I don't like that change. But who is teaching us this stuff? And this is where I'm worried about children learning to use AI in ways that maybe we don't really want them to use it or that isn't beneficial for their development, their brain development. You know, we know brain development at young ages is so, you know, subtle, isn't it? From all the influences that children get, they need the human touch. And they need the, you know, up to age 5 particularly.
They need physical books, don't they? Yeah. Physical. Did you hear those stories about kids, you know, not knowing what a book was, trying to scroll it like an iPad, you know? What would you, if you could, you know, overhaul it, what would you do? What would be the sort of basic things you would put in place if you could, you know, make a change that would be for the better?
Well, it's my mission, and this is a bit philanthropic, actually. I don't see this as a commercial, so I'm doing it as I go along. But it's to install in the national curriculum a topic that would sit along maths, English, French, science, call it what we like, communication skills, connection, the human language. But it encompasses all of this, how to connect on a human level, how to have conversations, how to say things so that your other you know, friend will hear you and it won't get defensive and won't affect them, how to take judgments out of your language and come from an empathic point of view, how to be empathic to yourself, how to not blame yourself and say, I shouldn't be doing that. And you know, and I'm an awful person, how to build those healthy core beliefs, because we're building a new way of thinking, actually, not just speaking, but a new way of thinking that translates into, you know, what we say to ourselves, what we say to others, how we have those interactions, how we build relationships, how we get on with people. And you know, and my belief that is, if children were taught that age appropriately and alongside AI, let's face it, alongside how to use AI wisely, when not to use it, from the age of five, we can talk to children about feelings. We can help them become emotionally literate. We can help them have self-confidence without their ego getting involved. We can teach them what egos are at the appropriate age. And by the time they were teenagers, they'd understand that their brain was being pruned. And that they are going to be somewhat self-centered at that age, but they'll understand it because they've grown up with that understanding. So there's a bit of neuroscience in it. There's a bit of psychology. There's a bit of you know, language, well, very much language. And my belief is, if this were to happen, say we were to put it into the curriculum now, you know, teachers were taught how to teach it, parents were given the rudimentals as well.
It'd be much more use than early maths.
Yes, exactly.
Which no one needs.
So in another generation, those children, when they have children, it's going to be the natural way to communicate. And I call it a little bit, you know, pie in the sky, but I've got this vision that this type of teaching could actually transform the way people connect, has the potential to bring peace, to you know, work away from these dominant figures that we've got in our society at the moment that aren't necessarily bringing you know, benefit to the generations to come, and to sort of work together, because like it or not, we're interdependent. We're, you know, we're not individual, are we? You know, we depend on each other. As humans, and we live together on this planet, and we need to be able to work together and get on together to sustain it and sustain sustain human beings, because you know, it's without it, it could be a, you know, an unhappy picture, I think, for the future.
So Penny, tell us about your online course that you have, and also tell us a little bit about the book, although I know it's a little bit secret right now, but you can just give us a taster of when the book might be coming out.
So I can say that the book's coming out in early September, the book is sort of aligned with my four current online courses that are out there at the moment, and it's all about this language. It takes you through, I've called it the mechanism framework. That's MECA, NISM, without the H. And it takes you through the mind, helps you understand, you know, how the mind distorts things, the judgments, and how to translate those judgments into observations and get the mind clear. How to then the emotions, how to connect with your emotions, what are emotions, what aren't, separate those and be able to speak about them. And also empathize with others' emotions, so be able to listen to others. And then about the core needs to be the C, to be able to understand what core needs are popping up at any moment, so we can decide, okay, so I was trying to meet that core need, what I was doing wasn't working, so now I know what the core need is, this is what I can do. And I'm going to make a request of somebody, and that's the action. That's how to take action to meet the core need. It will have lots of examples, so you can pick an example that's most like your current situation and work through it to see how you might normally have this conversation with our learnt language, and how you can have the conversation differently with the human language. So, online course and book. And
great. Just want to give us your website where people can find all of this.
So we've got www.compassion.co.uk, and the compassion has two M's.
Yeah.
And the courses are at foryou.compassion.co.uk.
Right. I'll make sure that goes in the show notes.
Brilliant. And also there's a course coming out, a business course directly for managers to work through, to adopt this new language for how they manage their their.
Man, that's a conversation for another day. How needed is that?
Yes. Oh, incredible.
Everything that goes on, I've got, four kids are all in the sort of workplace or doing bits and pieces. And oh my God, the stories you hear about poor management, it's constant.
Yeah, managers don't get nearly enough.
No, they don't. No, I can imagine that. Penny, we have to leave it there. Thanks ever so much. It's been absolutely fascinating. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Jamie. Thanks for the opportunities.
You've been listening to the Natural Health and Sobriety Show on UK Health Radio.